I don't know if you've noticed, when we chant the sutta, the analysis of the path, like we did last night, the longest section is right concentration. It's the only section that talks about stages in the practice. And it gives a fairly detailed map of the different elements in each stage. And the question is how to relate to the map. Because it's easy to say, well, there's this ingredient and there's that ingredient. And so you pull the different ingredients together and hope that what you've got is a state of jhana. But it really doesn't work that way. It's like being told that durian tastes a little bit like garlic, a little bit like onions, a little bit like custard. Has a little bit of cyanide, a little bit of vitamin E. So you throw all those things together, thinking that you're going to get durian. And it doesn't work that way. You get an absolute mess. If you want to get durian, you want to plant the seed. And the seed is the topic of the meditation. The topic, as the Buddha said, is the four establishings of mindfulness. Staying focused on the body in and of itself. Ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. That's what you focus on. Once you've planted the seed and you water the seed, then the tree will grow. And the tree, when it's mature, will start giving fruit. And if you've planted the right seed, you're going to get the right fruit. So you don't have to go designing the fruit. You just have to be very careful that you plant the right seed. So focus on the breath in and of itself. Then as you're focusing on the breath, put aside any sensual passions. There's the phrase in the description of jhana, secluded from sensuality. Some people interpret that as being secluded from sensual pleasures. You have to find a place that's unpleasant to go or a place that's very boring. That's not what the Buddha means. Sensuality, in the Buddha's sense, is your passion for your sensual thoughts. So you're not trying to close off any contact with outside senses, and you're not trying to put yourself in a dull, boring place. It's more an internal seclusion. If you see any sensual passion that comes up, you put it aside. This is where the analysis of the body into different parts comes in. It comes in handy right here because you can notice if there's anything in, say, in a body that's got you lusting for it. Well, think about all the other things that are in the body that are disgusting. If you're feeling some greed for food, well, think about what happens to the food, exactly how much work goes into preparing the food and how long it actually tastes good in the mouth, and then what it's like as it goes to the rest of your system and comes out the other side. In other words, you're using some thinking here to protect yourself, to pull you away from unskillful thoughts, and particularly from sensual passion. You want to get into the body. This is what rupa means in this sense, that you're inside your body. You feel the inside of your hands, you feel the inside of your feet, the inside of everything. the mind isn't living out in the world of its thoughts about sights or sounds or smells or tastes or things that come and touch the body. You want to be on the level of form. So again, body in and of itself, as it's present to you right here and now. And as you're alert and mindful, you want to use your alertness, use your mindfulness in a skillful way. In other words, notice how the breath feels. Is this a kind of breath sensation that you could settle down with and spend lots of time? If it's not, well, what can you do to change it? This is where the evaluation comes in. The image for the first jhana is of a bathman working water through his lump of bath powder, turning it into a kind of dough. And of the different images that are used for the jhanas, this is the only one that has an active agent intentionally doing something. You're taking the pleasure and you're working it through the body. First you're finding a sense of pleasure with the breath, and then you work it through the body. And in doing so, you learn an awful lot about this sense of form in the body and how the energy moves, how it can move in a comfortable way, and how if you force it in the wrong way, it gets very uncomfortable. And you have to observe, and you have to learn what works and what doesn't work. This way you're not only developing a nice place to be in the present moment, but you're also learning about the different aggregates, the aggregate of feeling, the aggregate of form, how they interact, how your perception has an effect on these things. Because you may find that you've come to the meditation with a specific perception in mind, a particular idea in mind of how the breath works, how the energy in one part of the body relates to the energy in another part of the body. Well, you get a chance to test that perception. If you find that it's not working, try out other perceptions. All of this is evaluation. So when you've got the right focal point, you're evaluating it properly, you're keeping that specific topic in mind as continually as you can. You've got all the causal factors that can get you into right concentration. And you don't have to think about anything else. You don't have to ask yourself, do I need a little bit more of rapture, a little bit more of pleasure? If you've got the causes right, they'll come on their own. The pleasure will come as a sense of ease. The rapture can come in many different forms. In some cases, it's simply a sense of refreshment, lightness in the body. Other times, it's more intense. But again, your main concern is to stick with the causes. You don't want to go out and redesigning the fruit, or painting the fruit, or squeezing the fruit, or pulling on it. Focus on the causes, and the fruit will come of its own. And then there's always the question, how do you know that you've hit the first jhana? We don't really know. It doesn't come with a sign. It says, now entering jhana. When you find the mind in a state that feels really good, feels comfortable, many times it's a sense of coming home. Put a post-it note on it. This might be something important. In other words, you apply a label to it, but at the same time you realize you're not really familiar with the territory yet. So you don't want to be too quick to incise things in marble. The only one of the jhanas that has a really definite signpost is when you get to the fourth, and that's when the breath stops. You have a sense of awareness filling the body, and it's all very still. The mind is still, the body is still. everything's perfectly balanced. Okay, at that point, you know you've hit the fourth jhana. And you can put a stronger note there. Then you can look back at the various stages you've been through. You might want to have to rearrange the notes a little bit. Or you find that you've got more than four steps coming in. There are passages in the canon that talk about five steps. Others that talk about three. I noticed when John Fuang was teaching his students, different people would have all kinds of different experiences in the meditation until they got to that one point where everything was very still in the body. The breath finally stopped. Breath energy was filling the body. Everything felt very connected and very bright, not necessarily with a light, but with a sense of a real clarity. And then when they hit that point, then from that point on, everybody seemed to be going through the same stages. So getting in there is going to be a very individual thing. The important thing is that you find a topic that you really like. There's got to be an element of delight here, because you are trying to develop a state of becoming, a healthy state of becoming, an alternative to the unhealthy and unskillful ones that you've been engaged in before. And an important component in becoming is delight. Because of the right concentration, when you have a strong sense of ease here, that's the only way that you're going to be able to pull yourself away from the temptation to keep falling back to your old sensual indulgences. The Buddha said at one point that even though you may have a right understanding about the drawbacks of sensuality, if you haven't had any access to the kind of pleasure and rapture that jhana can provide, you're always going to be tempted to go back. So simple insight on its own is not enough to pull you away from those temptations. You need something else to provide the mind with a sense of well-being. And this is what right concentration provides. There's a nice sutta where it talks about a bull elephant who wants to go down to the river and bathe alone, but when he lives with the elephant herd, he goes down there and he gets knocked around by the she elephants and the baby elephants. He wants to drink clear water, and of course they've muddied up the river. So he decides to go off on his own. And when he's living alone, when he goes down to the river, the water is clear, nobody's bumping into him as he bathes. He comes out and he breaks his twig off of the tree and scratches himself with the tree and finds satisfaction. He allays his itch. And the Buddha said this is the same when you practice right concentration. You gain a sense of seclusion and the pleasure and the rapture and the sense of equanimity. It's like scratching yourself with a twig. It feels good. And that's an important part of the practice. Without that sense of ease and well-being, everything gets very dry. And at the same time, you get to see the mind really clearly. You get to see the body really clearly, because you're here very consistently, alert, mindful. And you begin to see the body and your mind in terms of the aggregates. You see form, i.e. the form that you're inhabiting. You see feelings, the feelings that come from the different ways the breath energy moves through the body. You see your perceptions in action. You see your fabrications in action. Let's say, for instance, when you move from the first to the second jhana, you let go of verbal fabrication. And your relationship to the object changes. You say that singleness of preoccupation or one-pointedness is a factor of all the levels of jhana. But when you get into the second jhana, the Buddha talks about unification, i.e. feels like your awareness and the breath become one. It's not like you're sitting outside of the breath, needing it through the body. You're actually one with the breath. You don't have to adjust it anymore. You don't have to evaluate it anymore. And things begin to meld together, merge together. and actually stay that way all the way up through the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness. So this is what happens when you let go of the fabrication, verbal fabrication of direct thought and evaluation. When you get to the fourth jhana, you let go of bodily fabrication. So there are two ways you can observe the mind. One, as it's in a state of jhana. In fact, all the way up through the dimension of nothingness, you can observe it while you're in it. And as you move from one to the next, you begin to see different fabrications, different perceptions just peeling away. So you're beginning to see exactly what the Buddha is talking about when he talks about these five aggregates. You see them in action. You see the distinctions among them. You also see how they interact, which means that you're not only in just a really nice place to be, with a branch that you can scratch yourself anywhere where you itch, but also you're in the ideal place to watch what's going on right here in the present moment in terms of the aggregates. And that sets you up to start looking at things in and of themselves as they've come into being. Right here, right now. So this is why right concentration is the heart of the path. It's the first element of the path that the Buddha discovered. You probably know the story. When he'd gone to the ultimate end of self-affliction through the various tortures that he imposed on himself, and after 6 years he realized this is not working. And in spite of all the investment he had had in that particular path, he had the good sense to say, there must be another way. And so at that point he hearkened back to the time when he was a child, and sitting under a tree he had entered the first jhana. And the question arose in his mind, could this be the path? He said, yes, this is the path. So it was right concentration that he discovered first. Or that he realized first was the path. And then from that point on, as he worked with it, he began to realize there were other factors that had to come along as well. But this is the central one. You can't do without it. And the time spent on developing right concentration is very well spent, both because it's a good place to stay, and because it's an ideal place to start seeing things in terms of the five aggregates. So you know in the back of your mind that this is what you want in the practice, this is where you're headed. But as with every aspect of the path, you have to combine your desire for a particular goal with an understanding of the steps that'll take you there. There are passages that say talk about having a desire for awakening is a good thing. But it's a good thing when it gets you to focus on the actual steps that will take you there. And the same principle applies to jhana. This is where we're headed. You know in your back of the mind this is where you're headed, but you can't be obsessed with the map. You have to be more obsessed with what are the causes that will get you there. You seclude the mind from sensuality. And where do you do that? By focusing on the four frames of reference, the four establishments of mindfulness. The Buddha says this is your territory as a meditator. If you wander off your territory, it's like the story of the quail who wandered away from the plowed field where you could hide from the hawk. Suddenly finds himself out in the area where the hawk can catch him, and he gets caught by the hawk. So he laments his bad faith, I shouldn't have left the field. And the hawk says, well, you think you're so smart, you've got a safe field? Well, let's see if it's really safe. So he lets the quail go. The quail goes and stands on top of a clod, or maybe a stone turned up by the plow. He says, okay, come and get me. And the hawk, without bragging, just folds his wings and dives down. The quail sees that he's about to be caught, so he jumps behind the stone. The hawk crashes into the stone, dies. So this was the analogy for when you wander off into sensual pleasures, you're out in a place where the hawk can get you. But when you're here in the body, ardent, alert, and mindful, okay, that's your safe territory. Just stay inhabiting the body as you go through the day. Whether it's jhana or not, it doesn't matter. But if you have this sense of being in the body, being in touch with the breath energy in the body, you're in the right location. You're in the proper territory. And as for the map of the different stages, keep that in the back of your mind. Use it after you've come out of meditation to reflect on what happened. And over time, you'll get a more complete map of the different stages the mind goes through, the different ways it settles down, the different types of concentration you're going to get into. But all of this comes from having a proper sense of cause and effect. This is why the Buddha put right view at the very beginning of the path. Seeing the practice of meditation as a type of karma, something you do with the results that you want. But always in the realization that results have to come from causes. If you focus on the causes, with in the back of your mind a sense of where you want to go. The causes are what will take you there. So in this case, it's not by focusing on your memory of what was stated in the text about jhana, it's by focusing on the breath. Can you know the breath by evaluating it and adjusting it, settling in? That's what will get you to right concentration.